She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
Hello, filthy humans! Welcome to Casual Trek. We are a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Ty and that one orb that gives one specific person a headache. Got a nemesis? Give them a migraine. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a fan of the hyper-capitalistic zombie role-playing game Red Markets.
And I'm Masri Labato, a science fiction writer and filthy human! And I am a fan of paying my rents on time, thus keeping my landlord off my fucking back.
Hooray!
I tend to describe my job to the customers as every week is a 40-hour piece of fully uninterrupted street theater called Miles has to pay his half of the rent to keep the landlords off my back. Also, I once got a complaint at work when someone asked me how I was doing. My response was, "Well, my landlord's going to be happy at the end of the month." And apparently, I'm not allowed to be honest about the fact that sometimes I'm coming to work just to fulfill the obligations to my lease.
Yeah, I mean, just yesterday, was it? No, Saturday, I was going around the Phoenix Art Gallery in Brighton because they had the studio open day and chatting to someone about writing and working and having an actual job. And like, it's for wealthy retainer that allows me to do anything creative.
Basically, I am my own Patreon. My own patron. Sadly, I wish my own patron gave me more money, but like food, and I have financial obligations and cat food to buy.
Oh yeah. Yeah, trying to guilt trip for cats there. I saw it.
Look, it is impossible to guilt trip a cat. The best thing about a cat, that the one thing that puts having cats over having children, is that I can call my cat a stupid brain dead little shit to his face, and Cat Protective Services won't come to take the cat away from me.
I'm just going to look sadly into a corner now. Right. Anyway, before I have flashbacks to my own childhood, what are we doing here? Well, we're a pair of casual Star Trek fans who like to look at three episodes based around a theme and put them on our big list of best to worst, but we try not to be dicks about it. So this time we're capering and buffooning around with those hyper-capitalist scamps, the Ferengi. Specifically, I only realised after we'd discussed the episodes to pick, these are all Ferengi episodes without Quark in them. So yes, but first, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
Well, on the subject of hypercapitalism, did I mention on the podcast that I tried to read Atlas Shrugged?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm following up with a caveat, because what I've been enjoying is replaying the video game Bioshock.
A better pursuit, definitely.
A better pursuit. I've played the game a few times, but never completed it because, as previously stated, my executive dysfunction has executive dysfunction. I've now gotten further than I have before, and I'm just enjoying the hell out of taking a spanner or a Tommy gun or a shotgun, because those do more damage. Two splicers. And also, the game does have a link to Star Trek.
Oh?
Because the voice of Andrew Ryan is Armin Shimerman, who plays Quark. I swear that this is why René Auberginois, who plays Odo, is the voice of Mr. House in Fallout New Vegas. I swear someone in the Bethesda casting department went, "Well, Bioshock has Quark, let's get Odo."
Yeah, yeah. Wow, I've played through Bioshock 1, 2 and a bit times, and it's very good fun. Like, it's a beautifully made game. I know it got some criticisms for the shooterness of it being, you know, not incredible and intricate. It's like, I don't give a shit. I'm here for the vibes, man.
We're Death Stranding fans. We have to admit that gameplay is not our best priority.
No, exactly. Exactly. Look, I've played multiple Dragon Age games, and most of those have shit systems, but a kind of fun. But yeah, good. Yeah, hopefully you'll see BioShock through to the end. Are you aware of the big things?
It's 2026. I knew of the twist about 3 months into the game's initial release because a friend of mine was playing it.
Ah, well.
It's kind of why, like, it's really hard for me to get into the original Knights of the Old Republic, because, like, the big gameplay twist was spoiled for me years ago.
Yeah, it's... I think, in a way, it's a shame, but also it doesn't remove from the drama of the moment.
No.
It's still a good story beat. So, yeah, hopefully you'll see it through.
I'll be able to start playing BioShock 2.
Yeah. Now, that one I never finished. Because, yeah, I guess I've got slightly better executive dysfunction. I don't know. Please disregard my uncompleted games part.
I'm trying, but I see that corner of comics and books in the corner of your room right now. So Charlie, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying these past few weeks?
Well, I did not expect to say this, but I've been really enjoying Saturday Night Live UK.
Huh.
I have never seen a full episode of the American one. I've seen all of 30 Rock a couple of times and Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which proved you can write drama, but that doesn't make you able to write comedy. And yeah, like whenever I see an SNL sketch in the wild, unless it's like something that really, really kind of catches fire, they always seem overly long and not overly funny.
The thing, as someone who does improv comedy, and thus is a low form of intelligent life, I'll be honest, most SNL sketches go on 5 minutes too long, and they're usually 6 minutes. It's like one time my mother-in-law showed me the Sweaty Balls sketch. Now, there's one joke. Sweaty Balls sounds like sweaty balls, and by 30 seconds of this sketch, I want to gnaw my own arm off and escape. But my mother-in-law is insistent that I watch the whole thing through, and I just really want to go, this stopped being funny.
Yeah, so SNL UK has a cast that I mostly did not know of before this. Like, Anya Magliano and Emma City, I only knew through Taskmaster. Yeah, and... yeah, it's been really good, and yes, sometimes they aren't sure how to end it, but luckily a few of those times, they kind of go into a bit of horror instead. They go into slightly worrying things. Yeah, there's been some great ones. There was a nice horror documentary about Mr. Blobby.
I've seen pictures of that on Blue Sky, and I know that Unshuti Gatwa was the host.
Oh, recently. Yeah. Yes.
And there are some jokes at Doctor Who's expense.
Yes. Yeah, there was a very... like, it's a show not without flaws. Every single host seems to have to refer to every single previous host and how brand new all of this is. But it's mostly been a really fun time. There are some sketches that still stick with me. I think it's the beef advert one, where it's just make it increasingly disturbing. Oh no, pork. Yeah, where the kind of actually having someone in a pig mask as part of the executives there observing it all, or at one point one of them just pointing out that none of this is real and the horror on the face of the guest host. It's like yes.
Okay, I think I might need to check out some of this because this actually sounds right up my alley.
Yes. The news stuff has been very good with it. And yeah, overall, like, yeah, I'm looking forward to there being a second season of it because it's 8 episodes now. And then I think September or so, they're going to bring it back. So yeah, nice and short. There are a million advert breaks. And luckily on Now TV, only every other advert break has adverts in it. I assume for shipping it over to the States, where every 5 minutes is an advert break.
Pretty much. It's kind of obnoxious. I remember I visited my aunt who lived in the US way back in, I think it was 92, 93. And I remember seeing an episode of that fantastic cartoon, The Tick, on Fox. And I remember it played the credits. And the moment the credits finished, commercial break.
Back in the day, in the long ago times, where I may have acquired episodes of TV shows like Buffy or Gilmore Girls through back of lorry kind of methods, sometimes you'd get an episode where someone hadn't edited the adverts out. And that's where I realized a 40-minute episode was about an hour and 5 minutes, because there were ads so often. And yeah, it was always shocking seeing that kind of thing.
And back in the day, I used to be able to acquire episodes of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on videotape. And it was a Yahoo group. This is how long ago this was. And I'd send them like £5 in an envelope. And I would get a tape of episodes which it was clear I wasn't watching like first generation copies. I was watching like a third generation recording off a US tape. So the video quality approached the levels of a snuff film.
Oh no.
But they had not edited out the commercials. So every 5 minutes, it was like commercial. Every 5 to 10 minutes, it was commercial breaks.
You know who would love this kind of thing?
The Ferengi Quark?
Why, yes. Yes, indeed. And that... Yeah, seamless segue. So, we have some horrendous capitalistic nightmares to go to, and a lot of real stupid hijinks. But first of all, we have something a little lighter on the hijinks, it felt like. We've got an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. This is from Season 1, Episode 9, The Battle. It aired on the 16th of November 1987, teleplay by Herbert J. Wright, written by Larry Forrester and directed by Rob Bowman. The UK number one hit was The Vulcan Diplomat to Pow with China in Your Hand, and the US had Billy Idol with Money Money.
I think with To Pow, this might be the closest we get to talking about Kate Bush.
Yeah.
Because I listen to this song, I'm like, oh my god, this sounds like a B-side from Hounds of Love.
It made me want to go and listen to Kate Bush instead.
Yes, which is, you know, for To Pow, not a great thing, but for my Kate Bush discography, that's a great thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was fine. Same with Billy Idol. These are both things which I keep thinking were earlier than they actually were.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I was just about 7 when they aired, so I wouldn't have heard them when they came out.
No.
So, Miles, you have 5 minutes to tell the folks what the battle is about. Otherwise,
I'm going to get headaches.
I was going to say, I'll stick you in an episode of Star Trek Next Generation with some real ropey acting. But, yeah, that the headache thing, too.
Charlie, I'm a Doctor Who fan. Ropey acting does not bother me.
Shit! Okay, fine. Well, go.
For the last 3 days, the Enterprise has been traveling alongside a Ferengi ship captained by Daemon Bok, who has also spent the last 3 days at no point communicating with them. Dr. Crusher visits Captain Picard in his quarters. He's claiming to be suffering from headaches. Crusher is concerned. After all, in our super-duper, really totally fantastically enlightened 24th future century, the humble headache is as extinct as the common cold, and she wants to do further tests. Picard fobs her off. After all, he finds the suffering of Ferengi more important than getting his head sorted. Daemon Bok! Finally calls up the Enterprise. He's got something for the captain and wishes to beam over. Picard agrees, and Bok, the ship's captain, his second in command, Kazago, and a third Ferengi, let's call him Ian the Ferengi, beam onto the bridge. just as the Enterprise sensors have detected a signal on the horizon. It's a Constellation-class ship, the Stargazer, Captain Picard's old command. The perfect gift for Picard, who Daemon Bok refers to as the hero of the Battle of Maxima. Picard doesn't remember any Battle of Maxima, but Data slips into info dump mode and reminds Picard that 9 years ago, the Stargazer was attacked by an unknown vessel, and while Picard led the ship to victory, the Stargazer was abandoned because of the damage. Daemon Bok reveals that the unidentified ship was actually a Ferengi vessel, and that he found and restored the Stargazer, which he has given to Picard as a gift, free of charge. To much to everyone's shock, including Kazago, because the Ferengi don't give anything away for free. Thankfully for the plot, everyone is going to be really fucking stupid and buy Daemon Bok's explanation that this might serve as a way of improving relationships between the Federation and the Ferengi. Remember when the Ferengi were going to be the big bad of Star Trek Next Generation, like the second Klingons or something? Well, Daemon Bok remembers, and he's not gotten the memo that this is going to be working out just as well as the Vore did as the next Daleks in Doctor Who. In the briefing room, old JL is seeming pretty chipper. He excitedly recounts what happened at the Battle of Maxima. It turns out that Picard pulled off this super cool move where he did this really short warp jump to right in front of the enemy ship, causing the enemy scanners to briefly see two ships. This is kind of like the after image technique in Dragon Ball, where someone moves so fast that they leave an image that acts as a distraction for their opponent. While the Ferengi vessel was shooting at the fake image, the Stargazer fired at the ship point blank and destroyed it. Unfortunately, they had to abandon her and limp to Federation territory in shuttlecrafts. Picard's little trick has been called the Picard Maneuver in the Starfleet manuals, and there's like no way to counter it. Stick a pin in that. Riker and the team go on board the Stargazer to make sure it's safe for old JL to come aboard. Satisfied, JL beams aboard and is overcome with nostalgia for his old command. As Data collects the Stargazer's logs, Picard goes to his quarters and finds a trunk of stuff he left behind, including a strange big metallic glowing orb. You know, we all have one. It's like the 24th century equivalent of that old iPod that doesn't work anymore. Meanwhile, on the Ferengi ship, Daemon Bok has a similar orb, one which, as he manipulates, laughing evilly, causes Picard's headaches to get worse. The away team beams back with Worf bringing aboard the captain's space trunk. As Crusher tries to work out the cause of Picard's agony, Data comes in with a horrifying revelation. It turns out that in the captain's logs from the Stargazer, what actually happened is that JL attacked the Ferengi ship without provocation and not in self-defense like he claimed. And before he abandoned ship, he left a message basically saying, "I confess to everything, including my horrific war crimes." The thing is, Picard is now starting to remember things differently. Maybe the log is correct, and he did attack first. No one on the Enterprise buys it for a second, but they're going to check it out. Picard goes to his quarters to rest, Crusher giving him a sedative. Meanwhile, Daemon Bok is playing with his special ball, causing Picard to start hallucinating in his quarters, making him relive the battle, surrounded by the ghostly images of his former crew as illusionary fire blazes all around him. Riker calls up Kazago, his opposite number on the Ferengi ship. Look, from first officer to first officer...
Ooh. First officer's code's gonna have to wait. Time is up. So... Bum, bum, bum. And carry on.
From first officer to first officer, do you think I should grow a beard? I think I'd look much better with a beard. But also, what's the long-term goal here? We know Ferengi don't do anything without the chance of profit, so what's in it for any of you? What's Daemon Bok playing at? Kazago was all, "You know, Riker, you're making valid points here, but I've no clue." Wesley, the boy, Crusher, goes to sickbay as Troy and Crusher, Dr. Crusher, are discussing Captain Picard's headaches. The boy tells them that he's been detecting weird signals from the Ferengi ship that match the same readings that Dr. Crusher is getting from the captain's headaches. Crusher and Troy go to tell Riker, while the boy essentially puts on his space fedora and says as they leave, "You're welcome, ladies." Meanwhile, Picard is beamed over to the Stargazer, where Daemon Bok is waiting for him with his big glowing ball. So yeah, the captain of the Ferengi vessel was actually Bok's son, and he's done all this as an incredibly convoluted revenge scheme. The big glowing ball is an alien artifact that Bok spent his entire savings on will make Picard relive the Battle of Maxima. But this time, Picard will think that the Enterprise is the Ferengi vessel, and I guess Bok just wants Picard to destroy the Enterprise. Bok returns to his ship as the Stargazer moves to attack the Enterprise. Kazago calls Riker to tell him, "Oh, hey, by the way, I'm in command now. We've locked Bok in his quarters for not acting purely out of attracting profit. We're also going to clock off for the day and not help. But hey, we're rooting for you, honest." Riker asks Data to think of a way to counter the Picard maneuver, and Data isn't sure. But just as the Stargazer warps, they catch the Stargazer in a tractor beam before it can open fire. Riker gets in the comms and gets Picard to snap out of his delusions just long enough to ask him if he sees a weird giant floating ball thingy. If he does, Picard needs to shoot it with his phaser. Picard pulls out his phaser and shoots the orb, and the orb explodes, hurtling Picard across the room. Maybe try firing from the other side of the room and not right next to it, is what Riker should have said before Picard did anything rash. With the orb destroyed, Picard's headaches are gone and his mind returns to normal, and he beams back to the Enterprise as they proceed to tow the Stargazer back to the nearest starbase. Ian the Ferengi did nothing this entire episode. He now breeds Kavarian racing ducks with his partner, and he is happy, very happy to say his lover, Jeff the Ferengi. They are now in severe debt thanks to the Kavarian racing duck blood doping scandal. Somehow, FIFA is involved, because of course the Ferengi are part of FIFA.
Oh my god. It all makes sense. God. Yeah, FIFA. Are they the most Ferengi company out there?
Possibly.
And I guess there are a lot of companies that could fit that. Oh, in 3 minutes and four whole seconds. Yeah.
I will keep saying this. I love season one of TNG. It's always just kind of, it's so earnest and has no clue what it's doing. It's kind of adorable.
It's like, no one gives an A performance here. No. But at the same time, there's a lot of fun to be had. You know, none of them really, like, none of the continuity or lore has really been established enough to adhere to, and it's far enough away from the original series that it's not even, it doesn't feel beholden to that.
And also, it's trying so much to kind of emulate the classic series before realizing that it can do its own thing, that I can almost imagine this actually being an episode of TOS. With it being Kirk and Spock being the second in command. I mean, okay, I don't know. I guess the boy would have been Chekhov.
Yeah, I mean, that was their equivalent for boy, surely. But yeah, like, there's a moment at an ad break where Riker is looking to camera in a kind of quietly bold but concerned way. It's like, yeah, this is a Kirk shot that they're doing in this moment. It is exactly what I'd expect a Shatner look to be. And I don't know if that's Bowman's directing. I don't know if that's Frakes having been told, you're the Kirk in this one.
It is basically like in Red Shirts, the Scalzi novel, when the Captain Kirk character acts like there is a commercial break and yeah, just does a kind of a pout to camera.
Yeah, exactly. And then everyone's like, why are you looking off that way, Will? You're right. Yeah, it felt like they hadn't 100% established, I mean, they rarely established what Troy actually does, which is why even Worf was like, oh, Troy's a therapist. in like a season 7 episode. But in this case, it feels like a lot of the questioning that Crusher does of Picard also fits the remit of actually why Troy is here.
I like the idea that Worf has no clue what Troy does in this ship, but he just finds it awkward not to ask at this point. So
yeah,
he's just
so kind of, many years.
He's been sick. He's just hoping someone will mention it. It's like, I don't know if you get this. I am bad with names. So after a while, I just never refer to anyone as name, and then just hope that the conversation naturally progresses along, that someone will say, as you know, Jeff, and I try really hard not to visibly kind of fist bump and go, Jeff, that's it.
I have friends from board game and RPG conventions who I've met so many times over years, and I might remember their character's name. I cannot remember their name to save my life.
It's like so many people I know from conventions who I just know as their online handle.
Yeah. I've just recently come back from CabinCon, the annual board gaming retreat that a bunch of friends and I go to, and it took us years. Like, I think one of our first years there, we did have name labels for the first day because we didn't know who each other was, aside from, you know, that person is Beard of Bees, that person is Simeon. None of these, like, yeah.
I'll be honest, if my nickname was Beard of Bees, I would have myself referred to as Beard of Bees or Bee Man.
Yeah, Mr. of Bees.
Yes.
I think we've used before. But yeah, I don't know, it's interesting seeing these early days from all of them. It's a rare episode where it feels like Data gets almost nothing to do, and they don't play with the kind of newness of here's a robot who wants to be a human kind of thing. Just the Ferengi going, we'll have one of them.
you know, I can see why Denise Crosby quit, because Tasha's not doing a lot.
No, she's just stood about doing nothing. Yeah, for Ferengi, though, I know we've not seen the very first episode with the Ferengi.
We have.
Yeah, where they're prancing about and capering and all of that. And this felt like a much more serious kind of thing. Like, I think this is the most, like, the least stupid the Ferengi are out of tonight's episodes. Which is shocking, given it's early in season one, where they're simultaneously an ominous threat and capering morons. So yeah, it was quite nice seeing that, especially like seeing their number one and Riker going, look, number one to number one, you know, we're really in charge here. So first officer's code. Yeah, help a brother out. Yeah, it felt like there was a bit sudden, the kind of, oh yeah, Diamond Box's fucked. We've dealt with him. Not on screen. Don't worry. Similar to how we're going to have just blank white backgrounds for the Ferengi ship, because we're not building a set for this.
We can't afford a set.
Who do you think we are? Just be pleased it's not a literal green screen.
There was some fantastic prop acting from Patrick Stewart when he's recounting the Battle of Maxima, when he's got, like, I don't know, it's either a pen or a suppository, I wasn't sure.
you do get to see a lot of Picard bits here. I saw it's the first time we see his bookshelves and sextant and all that. It's like, good. Like, I'd like to see some of the other quarters have stuff in them. So it's not just only Captain gets books. You guys read ebooks from pads, but I'm retro.
I'm the captain. I get a book, and
fuck yeah, this is made of paper.
And meanwhile, Riker gets his trombone.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, another thing which felt very 60s. The fucking camera angles in the dream sequence when it's all like the Batman kind of slanted camera angles. Like, God, I love a distorted distorted camera angle.
I mean, that said, the lighting on the Stargazer had that tone as well of like, oh, is this emergency lighting or mood lighting that they've got on here? Like, yeah, the Ferengi have made it all, you know, it's not quite by lighting, but, you know, it's not far away.
Damon Bok goes, and Captain, we have installed something. He presses the button and the fucking disco ball just comes down to the middle of the room.
So good.
See, that's what they should have done. The disco ball should have had the glowing space orb underneath, and just all the bits fall off, and there's the giant glowing ball.
God, when they were like, So we've moved all of his possessions over from his old quarters. It's like, good wolf. There was a giant mysterious trunk. But, right. Was he aware of this trunk? And, did you check anything was in it? It could have been a bomb. It could have been a corpse.
Wolf says, like, I'm not head of security yet. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, we just transported it over again, assuming that it would do nothing. It wouldn't react badly with the transporter. It's not going to Tuvix someone or something. God.
I know that Will Wheaton has spoken that his, like, the scene at towards the end when he's like, "You're welcome, ladies." Adults. That he has said, this is the moment that made the fans hate Wesley Crusher, because this was the moment that made him hate Wesley Crusher.
Yeah, that was rough. That was like, oh, you bullyable nerd.
I think this is apparently like the first appearance of the infamous Wesley sweater, which, yes. I'll be honest, I kind of want one.
Look, man, yeah, if I knew an easy place to get one, I would get one.
Look, there are a lot of things from season one of TNG that I would like to wear, one of which is the scant.
Of course.
I would have, you know, look, the amount of weight I'm losing right now, I would quite proudly wear the one-piece male miniskirt uniform from early TNG.
Yeah, well, you know, in theory, summer's coming. I say looking outside judgmentally at the clouds, because it feels like it's probably come and gone already over here. It's God, that moment from Wesley, it's so embarrassing. Yeah,
it's so embarrassing because you're like, yeah, this is how awkward nerds react to everything. It is that thing. I just think a lot of people just hate Wesley because they see too much themselves in Wesley and hate it.
Oh, definitely. Like, I remember when I was being moved up in English classes from the lowest one to the highest one, because they went, oh yeah, Ed Sykes come in, gone, the dyspraxia is kind of covering for a lot of this, and he can actually use his brain. And the English teacher taking me aside and saying, look, Charlie, we're moving you from this class to the highest class. Whatever you do, don't gloat. So, fuck. Oh, this guy knows me. He's clocked me already. That's like, he was one of the good teachers that had figured out ways the nerd kids not getting their ass kicked. And a lot of it was telling them how to not be so bullyable like that. It was just quietly ghost, just vanish. And no one will know.
Okay, I just wish that, like, he takes the nerdy kids and just teaches them how to throw a punch.
Yeah.
It's like, I wish that if I could go back in time and meet my younger, like, secondary school era self, first thing I would do, okay, I would tell him to do press-ups. I would go, okay, it turns out you're going to find out how sarky you are at age 21. You need to learn this now at age 14.
Yeah,
you're gonna get punched in the face 100% more than you are now, which is actually zero. But at least you'll be speaking back and kind of will deserve the bullying. Learn to be a sarcastic.
I see. Not stopping a bullying, just earning it properly.
Pretty much. The thing I would not tell him was that Doctor Who comes back in 2005, because any other important information I will have to tell my younger self will be completely forgotten. My younger self will be like, oh, so who's going to be the Doctor, like Eddie is? I was like, no. In about 5 years, you're going to see this film called Shallow Grave, and and like, there's going to be this guy who goes nuts and lives in the attic. He's going to be the Doctor. Am I going to see him in anything else? Yes, there's going to be this film 28 days later. The villain of the film, he's going to be Doctor Who, and he's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. I still need to see 28 years later. I am peeved that it's not shown up on streaming yet.
I mean, it's good. I still haven't seen The Bone Temple.
I've heard good things about The Bone Temple.
28 years later deserved all the praise.
Excellent. Well, as we're now talking about
Christopher Eccleston's filmography.
Yeah, Christopher. Exactly. It's probably time to rank this on our big list of best to worst, which currently stands at 205 items of Star Trek visual media, starting at number one with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Our midpoint is now TNG Genesis, where Barclay's a spider now, and Worf probably killed a guy, might have ate him, yeah, you know. And then at 205, right at the bottom, where it belongs, Star Trek Section 31. So
the film that could have been a post-it note.
Oh my god. And ideally one that got binned, really. Yeah, where does this go? Because it's fun. I can't really speak to quality for it, but you know, it's all right.
It's fun. I would probably watch it again.
Yeah.
Which, you know, puts it above our lowest ranking episode of TNG, which is 198, which is TNG Season 3, Episode 12, The High Ground, where Americans basically try and use Irish reunification and then completely bollocks it.
God, I was going to say, hang on, something's lower than Encounter at Farpoint, but yeah, yeah, your description just reminded me.
There's quite a few things which are lower than Encounter at Farpoint. We've got at 191, we've got The Host.
Yeah.
At 184, we've got The Child, which Space 1999 did better.
Yeah. Yeah, still not great, but yeah, let's see. I'm zooming up here and seeing at 135 we've got The Game from TNG, which is a lot of fun. And Wesley actually gets to do good things.
Yeah, does he actually get to kiss a girl?
I don't think he gets to kiss a girl, but you know, at least has a nice time with a girl. Given most of Wesley's existence here, which is he could only dream of being vaguely near a girl, and the only women that he will speak to are his mum and her friends.
I think there's an episode in season two where Wesley gets to kiss a girl, and Nos gets to claim he's not a virgin anymore.
Well, there we go. We can save that for a Valentine's Day episode, that kind of romance. Okay, let's see. As quality, just scrolling down from The Game and Menage a Troy, which I feel are both better than this.
Yep.
Let's see. We got at 144, there's Investigations, where Neelix is trying to deal with a mystery while presenting his own, like, kind of murder podcast, which was good fun.
Okay, at 148 we have TOS's Dagger. Ooh. Of the Mind, because we got some good ones. Like at number 147 we've got Kobayashi, where your favorite little scrappy scrap Dal badly speed runs to Kobayashi Maru.
I am just pleased that he wasn't magically wonderful and amazing at it, but kept kind of doing extra runs of it, even with a really good crew. Okay, I'm seeing here 159, we've got The Changeling.
Oh!
Yeah, which above it is Space Seed, which at least introduces Khan. So even though it's fairly low because it's not great and there is blackface, I think this is probably better than The Changeling.
I don't know. 160 beneath it is Beyond the Farthest Star, the first episode of the animated show.
Oh, that was a really nice opening statement of going, we can do some weird shit.
Yeah.
We have no budget. We will animate as little as we can, but our aliens could be really alien now.
Yep. And then at 161, we have the old classic Alamo Raid! Move along home.
Okay, yeah, that is better than this. Okay. Space Amoeba at 162.
Oh,
again, I'd say Move Along Home is really good fun and has a warm place in our hearts. Is not necessarily good.
No,
like, this is good but low quality.
Yeah, I mean, at 164, we do have Prodigy's Let Sleeping Dogs Lie, and I feel that is better than this.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Ooh. Yeah, I can see the quality's beginning to dip with a Space Adventure Hour at once.
Yeah, this is better.
This is better than that. All is possible with Tilly nearly getting some kids killed.
I mean, depends. Like, if only this episode had, Wesley get, like, slammed into a space locker by his space mum.
Oh. Okay. So what, between All is Possible and A Space Adventure Hour.
Yes.
I'm so disappointed by that episode. It
yep.
It could have done some great things, and I was in the mood for a Knives Out. Luckily, actual Knives Out exists. Which, yeah, I might have to rewatch at some point. It's so good.
Have you watched Wake Up Dead Man yet?
Oh, hell yeah.
I need to give that a rewatch, because, like, I don't know, it wasn't what I was expecting tone-wise first time around, but it was still fucking great.
Oh, hell yeah. Yes, our second episode is Star Trek Enterprise, Season 1, Episode 19, titled Acquisition. The laziest title that you could name a Ferengi episode. It aired on the 27th of March 2002. Teleplay by Maria and André Jacquemeton. Story by Rick Berman and Branham Braga. Directed by James Whitmore Jr. The UK number one hit was Gareth Gates with Unchained Melody. And the US number one hit was Jennifer Lopez featuring Ja Rule with Ain't It Funny Murder Remix. Now, the Gareth Gates one, it's like Unchained Melody, I feel, has been overdone and overcovered. And in my mind, the Robson and Jerome cover is inevitably what's going to be playing. Gareth Gates, I've never really, like, he came up at a point where I never really had time for him. That said, the Jennifer Lopez video, it was one of those memory unlocked kind of thing between, again, Radio 1 at Dave's Comics. This was a song that was often playing. And yeah, on MTV, while we were mostly MTV2 people, occasionally we'd go over to MTV Base, which was more likely to play this and going like, oh yeah. Yeah, I think this was my first encounter with Jennifer Lopez. And yeah, like, I don't know, that thing of, ooh, okay, yeah, bit of a crush there, but yeah, then completely forgot all of this song existed. So, yeah, I don't know if you've got any fun experience with either of these.
I have no fun experience with Jennifer Lopez, which I will regret to my dying day.
Wow, okay. So, on that note, I'd best recap Enterprise's episode, and I apologize for the amount of times I'm going to say capering here.
I mean, you could say scampering.
Maybe.
just you know, we're just going to make Die Hard a verb for this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and before you go, I want you to give me your best yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yippee-ki-yay, human!
And begin!
So, we get right into it, the gratuitous Ferengi guest appearance. Specifically, Ethan Phillips, Clint Howard, Jeffrey Combs, and some other guy. We're going to call him Ian. We don't understand what they're saying, but they're spying on the Enterprise many years before humans even met the Ferengi. It's Faith of a Hard Time, and then we're back in. The Enterprise crew have been knocked out, some humorously passing out in their meals. These Ferengi are wearing masks and wandering about. they close a cursed incense burner, and one of them gets a bit weird with T'Pol's ears. He's shooed away from the others before it gets, you know, too unpleasant. The Ferengi arrive on the bridge, and none of the main cast passed out in a funny way, which I'm disappointed at. We still don't know what the Ferengi are saying, but they seem stoked about what they've found. Trip wakes up in the gel rubdown room, having a bit of a nap, I assume, after a bit of a gel rubdown. He was safe from the gas, but thinks he's been there too long now. No one answers him, no one lets him out, so he hacks his way out and sees unconscious people everywhere. Dr. Phlox, everyone, all asleep. We get some more capering and buffoonery with the Ferengi while Tucker hides, watching them. One of them drags T'Pol out, and these guys are prying loose for chairs, which I admire as some proper level thievery. Like, anything that's not nailed down, and even those things too.
Did your dad do some of that as well?
I cannot confirm or deny. We get some more boobery and tomfoolery here. Clint Howard sniffs a boot, which I assume was not asked for by the director. The women get dragged off, and for a moment, I thought they were going to be equal opportunities slavers by dragging Archer off as well. But no, they keep him away from the girls and wake him up for hypo and ask where the vault is. Yes, they fucked up. Starfleet doesn't believe in capitalism. Archer spots Trip in the distance and decides this is a perfect time to play along. He says, oh yeah, there is a vault filled with gold, like actual proper gold. They can have it if they cut him in. There's an extended bargaining sequence, which is a little tedious and ultimately fails. So it's left to Jeffrey Combs playing the runt of the litter. They have a chat as Archer's forced to lug things into the Ferengi ship. And Jeffrey's the obvious weak link here. His cousin, Ethan Phillips, is the boss of the operation. He explains how acquisition works and all that, and Arch's like, man, that's real shit, and keeps needling him about his cut, how Ethan Phillips is handling his finances in the most, like, the most crooked version of Del Boy possible. Trip finds the hypo that woke Archer and wakes up T'Pol. She calls him out for being in his pants, which he has been for all of this, for those keeping a mental image. The Ferengi return for a bit more capering, so Trip flees and T'Pol plays possum. Jeffrey is interested in T'Pol still, and Arch says, no, no, don't mess with her. She's hot, but she is really boring, actually. Trip changes into a uniform and messes with a door for reasons we'll put a pin in. The Ferengi are still looking for the vault by themselves, but, you know, they're keeping on with the capering because they're Ferengi. They're shocked by an MRI machine. Oh, isn't this funny? One of them reckons the vault's going to be in the captain's quarters, and T'Pol sets off a little alarm to mess with their sensitive ears. She nicks a scanner and leaves the rest of them in Ethan Phillips's bag, setting it off to start him and Clint arguing in, like, a real Wet Bandits kind of way. There is so much Wet Bandits in this performance. It's kind of amazing. Archer suggests to Jeff that he should betray his cousin Ethan Phillips, as he'd probably lie about what's in the vault. It's not like Jeff can see what's there. And Jeff nearly agrees to a 50-50 split, and for Archer to throw in the Vulcan, but he doesn't fall for it. We get yet more buffoonery from the Wet Bandits as they interrogate Porthos, and Clint Howard puts him in the cargo. He hears Tucker, chases him down, and they fight until Trip's energy whipped by Ethan Phillips. The Ferengi fling Archer and Trip together, where they fake argue about the vault, about cuts of the money, and Trip says that Hosh is his wife, definitely not T'Pol. That's going to be weird in a few seasons' time. They have a fight, and the Ferengi split them up.
Oh, so I have to ask a quick question before we get on with this.
Yep.
What is it about British people and finding the name Jeff inherently funny?
I love it. There are good and bad Jeffs.
Jeff
with a G is generally, you know.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff with a J. Because I swear, whenever you say someone's, say the name Jeff in an amusing way, it's going to be Jeff with a J. Oh, it's Jeff.
good old Jeff. One of my first fandoms was Jeff Minter, the video game programmer who made Attack for Mutant Camels and ran a farm. I think he still runs a farm. Oh, and made Hover Bover, a game about borrowing your mate's mower.
Okay, were these games for the ZX Spectrum? Did these games come on cassette, is what I'm asking.
Yes, they came on cassette. They were Commodore 64 games, and I think they were also on Spectrum as well.
Okay, all right. For our younger audience members, computer games used to come on cassette tapes.
For our younger audience, cassette tapes were like a magnetic tape that contained a bit of, like, a few MP3s on them, and would sometimes get caught up and have to be unwound.
For our younger viewers, magnets are basically magic. No one knows how they work.
No, it's impossible.
All right,
I should probably crack on with this.
Okay, all right. You got to complete this, or else, Clint Howard's going to smell your feet in a kind of Quentin Tarantino way. Go!
Wow, on that horrifying note. Basically they end up agreeing to Tripp's offer to leave the women if they take the gold. And he's going to lead them. Now, Tripp has been diehard / home aloneing this place. So there's a bit of a chase that's going to go on with them. Jeff gets startled by T'Pol, who asks, did he come here to rescue her? And she gives him a bit of a lobe job, and then nerve pinches him while his guard's down. Tripp gets the wet bandits into a sealed room, and T'Pol's there with a phaser. The day's saved! Hooray! Archer asks T'Pol to let him out for handcuffs, and she confronts him about the whole boring thing. I thought she was into being boring. Oh well. The Ferengi are forced to put everything back, yes, including Porthos. No one shares the name Ferengi here because continuity. And Jeff says, I'm in charge now. You'll never see us again. Not until Star Trek TNG, I guess.
All right, that was 1 minute and 9 seconds. Okay, get out of here, Clint Howard. Back in your box.
Back in the perv box. God, yeah. I know we're very negative on Neelix, but generally pro Ethan Phillips.
Yes,
and he was in proper scamp Ferengi mode here. Like, he was a real jerk. Like, his proper fur coat was giving it very Harry, very very Del Boy.
I think Ethan Phillips was just glad to be playing season one Neelix again, but like Mirror Universe season one Neelix.
Yeah, the sinister, slightly evil one. Now, I was pleased to see apparently Brannon Braga, who wrote the story for this and was a showrunner for it, was like, yeah, this was a desperate act, getting the Ferengi in, because it feels like a desperate act. Everything about this feels like they went, shit, we need to get audience eyes on this. Like, I admit, I'd given up before episode 10 of Enterprise. So I assume the numbers were doing similar things.
That makes me have to wonder how much in production they were when the show was airing.
Don't know. Memory Alpha probably has the times, but a lot of these network shows would start while making them. I certainly remember with Lost, the turnaround was shockingly quick.
I mean, like, turnaround on classic Doctor Who was pretty insane, but that was the 60s.
Yeah.
And that's a weekly show as well, and a lot less effects heavy and a lot less production heavy, because, you know, like, basically slapping together stuff on a reel-to-reel edit.
Okay, so yeah, final draft script was issued on the 14th of January 2002. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure it would have started airing by that point. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, Broken Bow aired on the 26th of September 2001. So,
oh, yeah,
they'd have known. They'd have known by this point.
They knew what they did.
They knew what they did, exactly. So yeah, there was, what, a 3-month turnaround between scripting it and airing it for this, which, yeah, seems tight, but there is something that just often felt desperate about Enterprise anyway, of like, shit, we need to retain people, we need somehow gain people, we need somehow be popular, let's get for jail rub down room, let's, you know, get a model being Spock for this one, let's try and do the Kirk Spock bones thing again.
And yet they only had Dean Stockwell appear on Enterprise once, because I feel that is what you should have, they should have done, is like bring in Dean Stockwell as a recurring character. Like, we know he and Scott Bakula carried Quantum Leap for the whole entirety of Quantum Leap.
Yeah, so with this lot, like, they did get good actors for the most part. Like, Ethan Phillips and Clint Howard give good Harry and Marv. Jeffrey Combs is, of course, Jeffrey Combs. Although him being the weakling nephew, kind of, well, weakling, what, cousin? Of Ethan Phillips felt weird because it's Jeffrey Combs. He's not young and he's a weird guy. He's always very good at being a weird guy.
Well, it's the same with like the Quark Rom relationship, where it's like, you are both clearly men in your 30s, sir.
True. And God, I kept thinking during this episode, I remember listening to an interview with Armin Shimerman saying he felt he'd done bad by the Ferengi as a species, as a people. And when he went to auditions, there were people trying to be like the season one TNG Ferengi, scampering, capering, all the boobery and buffoonery and all of that. And when Quark happened, he was like, I can redeem this. I can make this better. So, yeah, and seeing people like Max Rodenchik doing Rom and going, okay, yeah, like, we can make this better. We can actually add nuance to these scampering goblins. And then you watch this episode, which I think is the least respectful or good about the Ferengi and brings them right back to season one. And I know, chronologically, they are nearer to this in some ways. Like, they will become the scampering goblins of season one of TNG, but we've just seen an episode that dealt with them well, that went, oh no, these hyper-capitalist dickheads can have a need for vengeance, can have a cunning plan, and aren't just prying up anything vaguely worth money, aren't like one step away from opening up the mouths of any of the Starfleet personnel to see if they've got fillings, you know? So yeah, it felt a bit reductive.
So was this meant to be a comedy episode?
Maybe.
I don't know. It's like you talk about, like, you know, the redeeming on the Ferengi, how it goes back, but it's like, okay, but at the same time, we're watching a Die Hard. We're watching a Die Hard in space, and you know, you're not gonna have your villains have the tortured interiority of although if the Ferengi had walked in being proper like gentleman thieves, like they're out of a 1910s like Penny Dreadful, that would be kind of awesome. Like, have one of these guys be like the oh shit, what's the name of the Fagin?
Exactly.
Another horrendously anti-Semitic stereotype in fiction, but still Ron Moody and chewing it for all he's got.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you don't need to go, oh yes, these are all going to be grimdark and serious versions. No. These are all going to be emotionally deep. Obviously, you got your bumpy-headed species getting up to no good, but yeah, I don't know. It just feels a lot closer to the Last Outpost Ferengi, which are the worst Ferengi, really.
I feel this episode, I think this episode needed more of Trip trying to find some boots.
Yes. You know, just being like, these, no, Clint Howard's been sniffing them.
Like, I thought when he did that, when he was getting the jumpsuit, I thought he was going to have that, like, check the boots, nope, throw them.
I liked the idea of him doing a Die Hard and doing a Home Alone. Like, when he started mucky around with things. So I was like, ooh, a plan is forming. Ooh, this is exciting. And even some moments where, once again, it's that thing of seeing the engineering and going, it's a big, weird prop. But it's a big, physical, weird prop. And that's kind of cool. Like in Doctor Who, when you see the TARDIS and the controls in the middle and go, this is a physical thing people can play with.
One of my favorite kind of tropes, which is two main characters pretend to get into a fight to cause a distraction, which I admit I'm a sucker for it every time it comes up.
Yes. Well, yeah, and things like how T'Pol was messing with the wet bandits of like, okay, I'm going to stick a communicator in the other one's bag and make it look like he's stealing and set it off. I've been back to playing Hitman a lot, and it felt exactly like that kind of thing. Like, I'm just going to cause a distraction.
T'Pol is up to antics. T'Pol is a Vulcan who is clearly down for capery and chicanery.
Look, Spock was. It doesn't matter how serious these Vulcans are, there's still a bit of chicanery and antics that goes on. Like, I don't know how down Tuvok is for antics, but...
Well, he is stuck with Neelix, so he is like... You know when you have that one co-worker who is an idiot, and you can't help but show your basic disdain for their very existence? This is the Starbucks coming back into me.
Of course.
So it's like, I've had some... Like, I could be a chicanery kind of chap, and then there are some co-workers who are so mind-numbingly stupid, I want to tell them to lick the electrical socket because I know they'll do it.
Yeah, God, yes, when I was leaving, I was changing secondary schools from an abysmal one. I very nearly got someone to try sticking their tongue in a fan as a fun goodbye.
That's a goodbye jape.
I realized they were genuinely, genuinely going to do it and had to tell them not to. Like, my conscience got there. It's like, what? No.
I once briefly convinced a bunch of teenagers in America that Monty Python and the Holy Grail was banned in the UK because of cultural insensitivity. I lasted about 60 seconds. Like, no, I'm just fucking with you.
Aww. See, that could have stuck with them. They could have been, like, watching it with some friends and been, hey, guess what, right?
Guess what?
They don't air this in the UK. But, you know, in an American app.
Yes. Love seeing Scott Bakula get to do Devious. Because I feel like, out of all the captains since Kirk, Archer is, like, very much the square-jawed Dan Dare, Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon type.
Yeah, he's either good old boy or he is, you know, starched, kind of stiffly, we play by the rules here. We're Starfleet. We don't lie kind of people. So, yeah. But there were some fun moments. I just wish the capering was a bit less stupid. Like, you could even do some good capering.
So, okay, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
If you're home alone and some people try to break into your house and rob it, what kind of Home Alone Kevin McAllister Rube Goldberg machine would you set up with the things around you?
I currently live in a building site, so I think the deteriorating nature of the house will do the work for me.
I think what I would do is I would set up a rudimentary catapult to catapult my cats at them.
Okay, good.
Because I don't think my cats would attack the burglars. But I think it would be enough of a surprise to kind of distract them so I can do a judo chop or a two-fisted punch.
Of course, yeah, just like Kirk taught us.
Just like Kirk.
Yeah. Oh God, we would die in any home invasion, wouldn't we?
Well, okay, don't forget, in America, I live in America, so they have guns. And you live in Brighton, so they would threaten you with, I don't know, like a box of cereals or like the mixtape from their band.
Maybe. I mean, I am on what they call Muesli Mountain, So possibly some non-vegetarian crisps or something.
I think what would happen is that you'd get jumped by some thieving hipsters who would wrestle you in submission by threatening to ask you to read the manuscript for their novel.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that'd do it.
We would both die.
I've done that once. I would tear my eyes out. You know, I have dear friends who, of course, I would read their work, but yeah. Mm. I have read the even more divorced Tech War that a colleague wrote, and oh, that was rough.
I mean, it could be worse. It could be their mixtape.
I mean, that would be shorter, frankly.
Yeah, but
anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway, as we're getting on to the horrors. Yeah, so we have The Last Outpost at spot 176 on this list. That's the last time we saw Ferengi this stupid. Do you reckon it's better or worse than The Last Outpost?
I mean, like, this have some good japery. This does have some good performances from Ethan Phillips, and...
Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
You know how I do like in this list to kind of try and... Whenever Neelix gets to do something, whenever Ethan Phillips actually gets to do something, I tend to kind of give it a bit of a leeway on the list.
Yeah.
Do I have to do this here where Ethan Phillips is actually clearly enjoying the chance to do some acting?
Ooh, it's difficult, isn't it?
I mean, but I would say that this is a lot better than The Last Outpost. Because we have less of the... We do have the weird perviness. We do have T'Pol having to give someone a Ferengi ear job. But at the same time, we do get Ethan Phillips and Jeffrey, the good Jeffrey, getting to do some acting. We get some Don Harding.
Yeah, sadly, Die Harding's good.
We don't have Reed unconscious in a soup.
I'd love that so much. Stick him unconscious in a gazpacho soup. Bring that reminisce that happens in Minefield.
Yeah, or Reed like slumped over a railing.
I assume it was a fairly low effort day for most of them. I feel sorry for Dr. Phlox, who got made up just to lay down for one scene. Like, how many hours did that actor have to deal with that?
A lot, probably.
Or did they just make up, like, a mannequin or something?
His stunt double.
Yeah, an extra.
I mean, did they do a big close-up of his face? Because then they could just kind of...
Yeah, it was, like, kind of looking close at his top and midsection, so you saw the face.
Maybe like have a stunt double or probably did like some second unit, so like, you know, they're filming another Phlox heavy episode and go, okay, we just need you to lie down and pretend to be no, less effort, arms by your side, don't try and act, don't try and do any kind of physicality, just kind of sit down and we'll shoot around you.
And this is Star Trek, so yeah, if there were corners that could be cut, they would cut them for that sort of thing. Okay, so better than Last Outpost, given, you know, the parts that it's got are a bit better. Let's see. Oh, I'm trying to remember Broken Circle. We've got that at 169.
That's Spock steals the ship. And then ends it by drinking with a lot of Klingons.
Oh yeah, that was fine. That was a bit action movie. You know, that was a bit. Oh, we've got all these different set piece things to do to bring the band back together and, you know, sort out everything.
Okay, 173. We have Justice, where Wesley ruins a visit to Planet Fuck.
See, now it's that problem of going. The capering is annoying. Like, the people of Justice are weird and
There's a lot of cardio in Justice.
There is a lot of cardio. God, yeah.
And
comparison here,
And while I've been doing a lot of cardio recently, I do not want to watch cardio on my TV.
No, no.
I would rather just watch The Chronicles of Planet Fuck, but there we go.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, we don't get those Chronicles because the boy has to have a story happen. Otherwise, who knows what we'd have seen. But, yeah, okay, I think Justice, almost for mimetic quality, is a little better.
And then, at 175, we do have Spectre of the Gun, which is the gunfight, cowboy episode of TOS, and that is delightfully weird, and I fucking love that ending.
Talked about that episode many times, just because of the beautiful, weird sets.
Oh, like the weird sets, and I love, like, they defeat the bad guys by Spock mind-melding them to go, the bullets aren't fucking real. Listen to me very carefully. The bullets aren't real. When they are shooting at you, the bullets are not real. Because if you think the bullets are real, you will fucking die.
Love it. Okay. I think this has brought us full circle back to 176 with Last Outpost, which this is better than, but Spectre of the Gun is so much more fun.
Yeah. All right. I am good with that.
Wow. Okay. What a circuitous journey. Lovely. So, yeah, that's Acquisition is our new 176.
Before we head off for the break, I have one thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the chain, you filthy animal. Oh, I love Home Alone.
It's so good. Episode 3 for tonight is Star Trek Lower Decks. This is Season 4, Episode 6, called Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. And sadly has...
This is the best title of a Star Trek episode ever.
It is. I wish it had anything to do with Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. But yes, it aired on the 5th of October 2023, written by Cullen Crawford, directed by Brandon Williams. The UK and US number one hit was Doja Cat with Paint the Town Red, which I believe we've covered
before. We've done a few times at this point.
Yeah, it's fine.
Fine.
Yeah. So, Miles, I believe you have, 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes?
2.5 minutes. Hang on a minute.
Cool.
Let me just pull it up.
That's all right. I realize I should switch away from where I'm probably going to order a burrito with halloumi.
Ooh, that sounds
yes,
nice.
It's called a halluminati. Which is why I was having that moment of saying it. But yes, sadly, I don't think they're open on the bank holiday, but burrito, lovely idea. Halloumi, yes, please. So, Miles, on that note, yes, you have 2.5 minutes, or you will have to deal with Ferengi bureaucracy.
I'm British. I can deal.
Oh, good. Well, may as well carry on anyway.
All right.
Right. Go.
The USS Cerritos has accompanied the USS Toronto to Ferenginar. Grand Nagus Rom wants the Ferengi to join the Federation, and Admiral Vassi and Captain Freeman are here to get all the paperwork signed. Vassi thinks Rom is an idiot and that this should be a pushover, but Freeman is not so sure. Meanwhile, Ransom is sending our scrappy gang of lower deckers down to the planet to do some research for the Federation travel guides. Boimler and Mariner are going to check out museums and cultural places, even though Mariner, who is going through her Season 4 character arc and is self-sabotaging drastically, plans to use it all as an excuse to get drunk. Rutherford and Tendi, on the other hand, are going to have to pretend to be a married couple to experience the Ferengi Hotel, something that our two clearly on-the-spectrum nerds start to find awkward. Oh no! The writers read my Lower Decks Rutherford-Tendi fic, or as I call their ship pairing, Rutherford and Tendi. On the Toronto, Rom and his wife, Bajoran Formo Dubbo Golita, arrive in Rom and immediately starts acting stupid and demanding changes to the paperwork. Freeman suspects something, but Lita takes her and Vassi aside and tells them, look, just let Rom change some stuff around, it makes him feel important. Rom immediately starts making very drastic demands of the Federation while making it look like he's utterly fucking stupid. Vassie bends over immediately. Mariner ditches the gang and meets up with her old Ferengi drinking buddy Quimp, who congratulates her on a new promotion, but Mariner immediately starts drinking, even though it's like 10 in the morning. Boimler has a huge itinerary of things he wants to visit because he's a giant list nerd, but also, Ferengi has something called television and TV shows, such as crime drama, Pog and Dar, Cop Landlords, and soap opera Will They, Won't They. Boimler immediately gets sucked in by the greatest threat to the Federation, lowest common denominator daytime trash television, complete with advertising and product placement. Buy a subscription to Paramount Plus. We get Jack from that. In the honeymoon suite, Rutherford and Tendi are getting more and more uncomfortable by having to pretend to be in love. They want to confess to their concierge, Parf, but Parf keeps wanting them to do romantic photo shoots and dress up in classy outfits and eat erotic chocolate statues of each other while admitting the things they like about the other. Also, if you're found out to be lying about being in love with your partner in order to get a nice hotel package, you get sent to the mines!
Time is up. To the mines with you. But first, carry on.
Mariner has gotten Quimp into a drunken fight with a biker gang and been forced to borrow a large sum of latinum in order to bail herself out of jail, and also to make sure that her actions don't disrupt the negotiations. At a war memorial for profits lost during the Dominion War, Quimp calls Mariner out on her bullshit. Normally, her outbursts have been out of her rebellious nature. Now it just seems like she's angrily lashing out. Quimp can see that she's stuck in old patterns, but she has all the support she needs. Also, she needs to stay alive and well enough, just long enough, to pay off what she owes him. Mariner tries to fob him off, but does apologize for her actions. Meanwhile, at the Federation-themed bar and grill, Tendi and Rutherford are expected to consummate their marriage. In a replica of a classic Federation starship, in a classic Federation shuttlecraft, while everyone in the restaurant listens. Okay, these guys definitely have my AO3 account. At that moment, Dr. Mikimo arrives to sample the cooking, and he did not get the, oh, these two are only pretending to be married menu. And immediately let slip that those two are just good platonic friends. Rutherford and Tendi, now caught out, loudly proclaim that they are actually in a tortuous love triangle with Dr. Miglimo, and that now that he's found out their torrid affair, they're now going to divorce, go back to the ship, and claim this never happened. Negotiations are going poorly. Admiral Vassie is quite literally dancing while promising Rom the use of any Starfleet vessel anytime. Freeman presents Rom the paperwork, but with one small caveat. In order to get everything they wanted, they have to bring one planet into the Federation. Vassie is shocked. After all, that would be easy with how many planets are in debt to the Federation. Are in debt to the Ferengi. But Freeman put a clause in the small print. The planet in question that they have to bring into the Federation is Kronos, the Klingon homeworld! Freeman used the 8th rule of acquisition, small print leads to big risks, and Rom drops the stupid act. Freeman has passed the test and swindled like a Ferengi, thus proving that the Federation is capable of respecting the Ferengi culture. Rom will sign the basic paperwork, and Vassie admits that he should have listened to Freeman from the start. Everyone's back on the ship. Mariner is upset with herself for hurting Quimp's feelings, but Ransom tells her that he'll always be there to support her. Rutherford and Tendi are glad to be done pretending to be married and just want to be best friends doing science stuff as they climb in a Jefferies tube in such a way that it looks like they're having sex. Get it? Wait, hang on. Where's Boimler? Oh, he's back on Ferenginar and he's fallen into a TV hole. He's upset because he let down Ransom, but Ransom's happy that Boimler was able to let himself go with the flow and not be stuck in his own head so damn much. But he also did tell hotel security to drag Boimler out screaming and kicking back to the ship. Man, Ransom mutters to himself, he likes that kid.
Wow, that's 3 minutes 15. And yeah, I've definitely been in that kind of television hole before. Yeah. Mainly during my bachelor days. But yes, I lived in an attic.
that I miss could just spend an evening just watching, like, binging Twin Peaks or Babylon 5 for a couple of days. And, you know, it's like, now I have commitments like laundry and sharing and spending time with my wife.
God, responsibilities, eh?
Yeah. Okay, I love this episode. It's a lot of fun.
It was very good fun. And it's that thing of, this has a lot of fun with Ferengi culture, and it still feels kind of done better than the Enterprise episode, as far as that goes. And that's even with Rom playing even more of a simpleton than usual. Although, you know, how much of that was for effect, how much it is because Rom.
You know, as we've seen, Rom is smarter than he looks, but he looks like Rom, so that's not difficult.
Yes. And yeah, I like that Leeta was very much kind of, yep, in on Ferengi culture here and having fun with it all. So yeah, it's interesting seeing Ferenginar a bit more, because the main one I remember was where Quark and Rom came down to meet the mum. Yeah, where it's all just a bit shitty and rainy, and we actually see Ferenginar from space. We see the horrors of it all, which some of it looks a bit like the skyline from the Orion place in the grimdark future in Discovery, of going, yeah, look, it's adverts everywhere. And
I have a question for you.
Go on.
Cop landlords, or will they, won't they? Which would be the Ferengi TV show that you get suckered into? And I'm thinking it's Will They, Won't They, because I know you and your propensity for teen drama obsession.
Yeah, I got it in one. And yeah, Cop Landlords just sounds... like, I'm not a cop show guy, unless it's, you know, like, I admit, I'm a big The Wire fan, and I know how pretentious that makes me sound. But
I enjoy the Columbo.
Yeah. But then it feels like someone that infuriates cops a lot, you know? And again, yeah, Cop Landlord just sounds like the worst thing. But did have me in hysterics the moment they mentioned it. It's like, oh no.
I am surprised that Cop Landlords isn't on its 20th season on ITV.
Yeah, I mean, if it was like NCIS Cop Landlords or Law and Order Cop Landlords, then over in the States it'd be...
I don't know, I'm thinking I'm thinking like a kind of a Midsummer Murders kind of show.
Looking into people's second homes and that.
Yes. Look, you know, investigating, you know, the houses, the amount of houses that people in the House of Parliament have.
God, and then finding out, oh no, it's all right, you're a corrupt politician, just bung us a fiver.
You're a corrupt politician, but you have Lord somewhere in your name, so we're going to let it slide.
Exactly, yeah.
Wait, you're how many steps removed for the Windsors? It's fine.
Yeah, even with that. Yeah, it was fun given this is, what, season 4 now, so there's probably been a good amount of Tendi and Rutherford shipping anyway, given the way they are kind of adorable and daft together.
Tendi and Rutherford, like, definitely seems like the main, you know, like, I don't know, Boimler Mariner just doesn't seem to work as a ship.
And I'm pleased about that, because far too often you get that kind of, because they're the lead characters and literally no other reason, we're going to stick these two together.
I think for one episode early on, they did seem to be kind of setting up a Ransom Mariner Will They, Won't They, and I'm glad they didn't go with that, because that would just be weird and wrong on many, many, many levels.
Oh God, yeah.
I do like the Shax and Dr. T'Vanna relationship we have going on throughout the show.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, like, especially with the Upper Decks people, things going on in the background over there, like, they have their own drama happening that we're not privy to, and that's fine. But yeah, as ever, I liked Quimp calling out Mariner on her bullshit, because it is so, like, with so many of these kind of things, going, oh yes, she is trying to be the loner, the rogue, the rebel, and it is like it's a bad behavior loop that she's got stuck in and has difficulty getting out.
She's trying to be the Rick, but yeah. I feel like the show never rewards her for being the Rick.
Oh God, no. Which is good, because yeah, you could see a lot of that kind of mentality. Now, admittedly, she's not a man, so even if she was acting like a Rick, the Rick and Morty fans that get too into Rick Sanchez would still not follow her.
No.
But yeah, it's
the thing is, it's like it's one of those things which is sadly too real, because yep, she had her character development, but then like nearly every season she ends up sliding back, and it's like, yeah, you know, that's the problem of like with character development in real life, is that yeah, it's usually going to be 3 steps forward then 2 steps back.
Yeah. But yeah, the one disappointment I did have, and I had to keep an eye out for this, was given the title, it's like, is there going to be anything?
No.
And it's like, no. It's just that Path is here. The Hugs the Urge.
I admit, as someone who has worked in a hotel, sometimes it has been very satisfying to just go to security and go, just chuck them out.
Huh? Wow.
Well, I did bars and banqueting. So yeah. If I'm asking for security to chuck someone out, it's for a reason.
They deserve it.
It's because they're literally punching people on the dance floor.
See, I'd worry about being either too awkward to ask or mad with power. There would be no in between for me.
I admit that when I was working bar, it usually meant that I'd started at 3 and was probably going to be working till 4 a.m. And so by about 11, I'm like, get them out. Just get them the fuck out.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like good hours to keep.
I mean, if I had that kind of power at Starbucks, oh my God, I would have gone.
There would be no customers.
No, actually, there would be like 5 customers, and the rest would be dragged out screaming and kicking.
And probably deservedly so.
Wait a second. You're asking for a coffee-flavored coffee, and you think that's funny and original? Right, drag him out, give him a kicking in the streets like the worm he is.
Yes. Right, well. Speaking of worms, do we have anything else for this?
Not particularly. I love the war memorial being in memorial of Lost Prophets.
Yes. Yeah, not the band Lost Prophets.
No.
But yeah.
I think I read somewhere that the April acquisition is actually from like a Deep Space Nine tie-in book where you could buy the rules of acquisition. Mm. I think I remember that being in like a Sussex Stationers back in the 90s.
Yeah. I didn't have it.
No.
I didn't know any friends with that. I did have a friend with a secret Star Trek shrine that had things like a Klingon dictionary in it.
My parents bought me a Klingon dictionary. But yeah, it's a good episode. I mean, sadly, because I'm actually not a Tandy Rutherford shipper, it's kind of like, I guess they decided to do an episode to address it and then just completely dismiss it.
Yeah, which is fun. I'm someone that doesn't ship much or often. I just like messy drama.
I have a friend who used to ship Cap and Bucky, but based on the films, not the comics.
Of course.
And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. As long as you're not weird with it, I don't really see a problem with it. It's like, yeah. It's like with X-Files. Do I ship Mulder and Scully, or do I ship Mulder and Ratboy? I mean, Agent Krycek.
Oh God!
I mean, it's Mulder and Ratboy because that's messy drama right there. Especially since Ratboy has killed Mulder's dad.
Oh yeah, I'm sure people have been forgiven for worse.
You're an X-Men fan. People have been forgiven for worse.
Definitely.
I mean, how many loved ones has Wolverine killed?
So many. So very, very
many. How many loved ones has Cyclops killed?
I don't know if he has.
Professor X?
Okay, okay, there was Professor X. Fine, fine. He's not quite dad.
How many innocent people has Beast killed?
So many.
So many. And...
but he doesn't care. It's all for science.
I mean, he got a younger clone of him brought back, so does that count as forgiveness?
No.
Then again, the evil one is still hanging around. The evil real Beast is still, like, hanging around.
Oh, yeah, the next event, DNX. Which, yeah, I guess is do not X.
Oh.
Which, given the current era, probably okay. Sound advice.
I thought it was going to be Defenders versus X-Men.
No. Fantastic Four had taken part in it for some reason. But yeah, it's 3K and the Kissinger Beast are up to no good.
And this is why I don't read X-Men comics anymore.
Fair. Right. Anyway, ranking.
Also, it helps that I can just go, right, what bullshit happened in the X-Line this week?
Yeah.
And then I'll get to like an hour-long angry voicemail.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a look at the big list.
Okay, so to the list. Yeah. I mean, this was a pretty good one. It was very enjoyable. There wasn't a huge amount done, but there was still, like, still good times.
There's some nice world building, there's some nice gags, and there's some nice drama.
Yes. I was trying to see where the DS9 with the lads and their mum are, but...
That's number 43, Space 9 Season 3, Episode 23, Family Business.
It is, yes. Okay, at the moment I was floating around kids these days, it's 76, which, yeah. Again, good fun.
The trouble but... is, beneath that is number 77... the animated series The Infinite Vulcan, which gives us a giant Spock.
Fucking love that giant Spock. As a Legion of Superheroes fan, this is the closest that you get to that Silver Age bullshit.
Okay, fantastic, because I thought you were just going to admit to a giantess fetish.
No. That's, God, the most recent old Legion issue that I had Brainiac 5... creating clones of dead Legionnaires, but they only last for 24 hours and then freaking out Superboy with them.
Okay, can I ask a question?
And then everyone's like, oh, you've got our cells to clone us. Fine, I guess.
Is there an actual purpose, or is he doing this to prank Superboy?
It's to test a kind of just in case.
Oh, we can do okay.
This. I assume Jonathan Hickman was mentally tagging this in before he got hired for House of X and Powers of Ten and X-Men when he was originally going to be doing a Legion reboot type thing. Because, yeah, that could have been fun. Oh, well. This is, quality-wise, this is far better than Infinite Vulcan. Both are about the same level of fun scrapes. Oh,
okay. Number 83 on the big list.
Oh.
A piece of the action with a fucking...
Oh, gangster, that was great.
Which is the other great gangster planet in Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think this is... I think piece of the action is possibly a bit better. But again, we've got the same sort of hijinks kind of stuff, which is great fun. I don't know, maybe worse than Peace the Action, better than Thine Own Self, which is good quality, but it's like this does more. Like that episode, you probably could have covered in the length of time of this and not lost anything.
Yeah.
Ultimately, where. Path Ferengi's Heart Place packs so much.
That's the thing about these. Whenever we do lower decks, like we end up going to like the 5 minute time for a regular episode just to cover what is in there. And I still feel like I still feel like there was a bunch of stuff that I could have missed that I could have covered in the recap. And it's just very bare bones because, like, you're missing out on, like, all the kind of gags on top of gags.
Yeah, I mean, it's that difficult thing with recapping, especially a comedy thing, of are you just going to be telling the gags?
Yeah.
Or
you actually telling the actual plot. And I feel like this time it was the actual plot.
So, yeah, we're saying, yes, this cartoon is better than what Ron Moore did.
Yep.
Take that, Ronald.
I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of stuff in the lower half which has Ron Moore's fingerprints on it.
And stuff all over this place, because, yeah, he did a lot. But, yeah, that would make this... This would be our new 84, then. And, yeah, like... Yeah, we've got... Actually, House of Quark is number 12 in the Ron Moore joint. So yes, he contains multitudes, just not...
It's like, even the best writer has... Like, Stephen King, one of my favorite writers, Christine is still a bit of a naff book.
Yeah, yeah. And there are some good books with poor landings,
yeah.
All the usual, but yeah.
It's like, you know, even the best writers still sometimes... Like, Alan Moore... wrote Watchmen, V Vendetta, From Hell, and also Neonomicon.
Yeah. God, Neonomicon. There's a name I've not heard in a while. Didn't really care to.
No.
Oh well. But, yes, before I go off to try and cool down in this heat, that's it for us, gentle listener. Next time, we're going to a world of magic.
Magic.
Ooh. Magic.
Magic.
Magix of Megas 2 wasn't it for magic in the Star Trek universe. Oh, yeah. There's a lot more magic to be had. So, yeah, get your decks of cards, your top hats with rabbits in, your dead doves, all of that ready for when we come back next time.
The cats ate my dead doves.
I mean, that's probably for the best.
I mean, given that, you know, we started the episode talking about how I blackmailed my... I didn't feed my cats. I think it's only fair that we end the episode with the fact that the cats did eat my dead doves.
Yeah, they're fed now. No one right in.
Now they won't, unless it's so now they won't nice. Bite my toes.
Good. Yeah, so... If you like what we do, you can always throw us some gold-pressed latinum at ko-fi.com/casualtrek and ask us for a particular theme or species or whatever to do an episode of Casual Trek built around it. You can find our social media as Casual Trek, both on Facebook and on Blue Sky. Miles, where can folks find you?
They can find me on my Blue Sky account at milesreedlibato.bsky.social or on my blog at mareedlibato.wordpress.com where I've actually uploaded something.
I yeah!
Within a month of another post.
Good.
And now having a better hit rate this year than Patrick Rothfuss.
Wow. Take that, Pat. Okay, good.
Wisconsin local boy.
Oh, God. So he could actually hear this and go, ooh, that Miles. I always knew he was a bad un.
Possibly. I have actually met him.
Okay. Good.
And Charlie, where can people find you when you're not scurrying around a building site?
Okay, when I'm not scampering and trying to steal tools from a building site, I'm found on Blue Sky at skyshark.itch.io. That's also the address of where any of my comics and RPG materials can be found. And fakedtales.com, which is my blog. And I've been posting about 2000 AD and about the solo board game Final Girl. So check those out. So yeah, and
as always, you know, live long, do a Starfleet, eat a jelly baby. And I'm sure in an alternate universe, you could probably find a podcast of us recapping Cop Landlords.
Yeah.
And Charlie's torrid blog write-ups of Will They, Won't They.
But will they?
But Charlie, what if they won't they?
Oh my God, such drama! Amazing. I have to watch more of it.
But you know where you could do that from?
Hmm?
A subscription to Paramount Plus.
Wow. TM.
You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and Tie podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Star Trek by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.